There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Last night, an e-bike saved my life.
Oh, tell us more.
One of the new stories on the BBC website. Right. Cycling is just a hobby to many, but many others, the battery power of an e-bike has transformed their lives. It's true. I guess that's true. People with limited mobility, they've probably never thought that they could, you know, their main form of transport could be a bicycle. But with the batteries, them lithium ions, beautiful. Get them legs piston pumping.
Get yourself a new Emperor battery in there. Or a new panda, or a alkalisk in there. You're away. It's funny you mentioned that, because on Monday we talked about Ginger Baker, didn't we? And he sadly passed away, drummer of Cream. This is a Luke and Pete show, by the way. I'm Luke.
Hello,
this is Pete. And Ginger Baker, I'm led to believe, became quite close to becoming a cyclist. He was almost a cyclist. Yeah, I think he had a kind of accident in his teenage years,
right?
Which meant that he didn't want to do it anymore.
He's quite tall and lithe, wasn't he? So I think he'd have the power, I reckon.
He's also fond of the drugs, so
he's getting in it for the pop belgers.
So he started drumming instead, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it because we mentioned it just as an addendum on Monday's show. But I mean, the volatility of Ginger Baker, Jack Bruce and Eric Clapton in Cream, this seminal 60s kind of outfit who put together some amazing albums in like a couple of years and then just split up. But they would be like properly fighting at one point I mean, this is the thing, right? I know, you know, sometimes you don't want to be old manny about it, but a lot of time people say, you know, it's a bit sanitized these days. It's all kind of, music industry's kind of, it is what it is. It's about fronting up, doing your press interviews, doing your bit, playing the game. Like, clearly it was much more like the Wild West back in the 60s, for example. And there's talk of that, and I think it might be covered in that film I recommended, Beware of Mr. Baker. During a Jack Bruce bass solo, Ginger Baker got so bored that he he just started smacking his snare drum with his stick, then threw the stick at Jack Bruce's head, right? So Jack Bruce got his bass and smashed the shit out of the kit and tried to hit him over the head with it, and the concert just fell to pieces and they just fucking left. I mean, that's proper. That's what you want, isn't it?
Well, not if you've paid your money. I think people are a bit more demanding about the professionalism of their rock stars nowadays.
And if I haven't told the
I'm
story,
straight up to the Viagogo website, they'd say.
Bass is
just trying to attack the drummer.
I'll be leaving a 2-star review. But if I didn't get a chance to tell the story on Monday and I haven't told it before, I just apologies if I have said it before, but very, very quickly, I'll just say it again. I went to go and see that documentary film, Beware of Mr. Baker, and it was I went with my mate Tommy, and it was a showcase, just advance tickets, we just bought tickets, and it was featuring Ginger Baker and a music journalist called Michael Hann. Doing a question and answer session after the film. So they showed the film and then Ginger Baker came out, everyone cheered. Maybe he was very frail even then, it was about 10 years ago. And they started asking him questions, but Ginger Baker was the most objectionable man. Like he just didn't want to be there.
Oh yeah, I do recall this. It was on the BBC website, wasn't it? Like this, the worst interview ever.
But the interviewer dealt with it quite badly in my opinion. But anyway, it just descended into him just saying, all right, just tell me the name of a drummer and I'll tell you whether I rate him or not. And that was the interview.
I like that.
I thought it was brilliant. I was absolutely loving it.
It's like those wrestling spot interviews where people have a list of names. They go, is he a dick? Dick or not dick? And they go, dick.
Yeah.
Dick. Everyone's a dick. Everyone's always a dick.
The opening scene of Beware of Mr. Baker involves Ginger Baker breaking the filmmaker's nose with his walking stick. He's one of those guys.
He was frail, old,
but just mentally hard.
He was on, he was in all kinds of trouble about 10 years ago, wasn't he? He was like, at death's door then.
He got well into the heroin. I mean, he lived to the age of 80, so good on him. That's what I said.
Well, that's what I always think about the, that wasn't an amazing innings when a rock star dies quite young. I mean, people like I don't know, Tom Petty or something. Didn't
how old was Petty?
I think he's just approaching the 60s, I think, maybe.
Right.
He wasn't old. Old, anyway. But you sort of think, the amount of fun those guys had.
Yeah.
If I've ever overindulged in anything, I sort of go, oh, that's knocked 5 years off at least.
I think Ginger Baker died quite... I don't think he was very wealthy or anything. I think he had made some poor decisions. Mm. But he was...
No, he's mad. Didn't care.
Yeah. So, anyway, God rest him. His contribution to popular music will never be forgotten. Some amazing stuff, and he did some really interesting stuff as well. A lot of jazz stuff, a lot of kind of Afrobeat. Mm. Went to live with Fela Kuti for a while. Did his own sort of jazz kind of project. Interesting
and
stuff.
And put up with Clapton.
Followed the music. Yeah, well, quite exactly, yeah.
So what's been going on? We're just more tours, really. Just much more, just bits and bobs are off the bar tonight.
Yeah, so we are. I was quite interested in this story which came out of the BBC website. A man was stopped by police who essentially got so upset that he failed his driving test that he just drove off.
Oh, what?
He ripped the L plates off his car and just drove off. And he got about 5 miles down the road, and the police pulled him over. And here's a thing, right? Here is a thing. That's quite funny because he's had a tantrum. Here's he's probably a young man, and we've all been there. We haven't all done this specifically, but a couple of things caught my eye. One, he's driving a peach-coloured Mini, which is quite funny.
Yeah.
And two, the prevalence of different police services on Twitter is, I find, quite interesting.
What do you mean?
Well, police are there ultimately to prevent crime and to stop crime, right?
Yes.
And to arrest people for committing crimes, all the rest of it. And the community outreach thing is important. I understand that. It's a big part of it, particularly in London, all the problems we have here. I get that. But when they tweet stuff out like this on the A50, bloke fails his driving test in Derby, throws his teddy out of the pram, rips his L plates off, jumps in the car and drives away. Stopped, vehicle recovered, reported to court, hashtag seized. It's like, you're showing off there.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be doing that.
Sure button. A man who's clearly having a difficult day.
Community outreach is one thing. It's important to show people what you're doing, how their hard-earned tax money is being spent, et cetera, et cetera. Don't be taking a piss out of people for committing crimes and making mistakes because you end up looking like a prick.
Well, exactly.
People sometimes fairly think the police are pricks anyway. Mm. It's not a good look, I don't think. Mm. So Derbyshire Roads Policing Unit, think again.
Agree. You wouldn't get on one of those, those motorway cop shows, whoever tweeted that.
But they would. That's part of the problem.
What?
They would.
They all
want to
be celebs.
You ever seen Road Wars? They've all got like nicknames and they've got little mascots and stuff. I just don't know if that's the right thing to be doing.
No, I don't think.
It's still a funny story though, isn't it?
It's not a performance. I enjoyed, I was watching a clip yesterday of a bloke from Liverpool getting arrested on the Strip in Las Vegas, and he is pissed. And I don't think I've ever encountered a man quite so drunk.
Why was he pissed? What have he been doing?
He's just been out and about. He was top.
Why was he pissed, Pete? Because he'd been drinking.
A little bit of the bubbly.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, the bubbly. Yeah. He was completely, he was topless, just wearing a pair of swimming shorts. And he was just trying to get back to his hotel. It was during the day. He didn't know where he was. Mm. And he's going, yeah, we saw you over there, sir. And he was going, I was in camouflage. You couldn't see me. He was just absolutely wazzed.
What happened to him?
I think they were surprised at how jovial he was and how... He wasn't saying, fuck off, fuck the police. Because he was just pissed and he was scared he was going to get arrested.
But you can't muck around with
the
Americans.
You can't muck around with the Americans.
No way, Jose.
They will draw a bead on you.
What are you expecting from Bournemouth tonight, Pete? Have you been to Bournemouth before?
Have I been to Bournemouth before? I think I was going to go out in Bournemouth because my friend lives in Abhotsmouth, or he lives in Gosport, rather. So it's not a million miles away from there.
It's quite far away.
Is it? How many miles?
I can remember the only times we ever went out in Bournemouth when I was growing up was when someone put on like a special like minibus to go to Opera House, which was the big nightclub
Opera
in Bournemouth.
Opera House.
It was fucking terrible. I hated it at the time, but I pretended I liked it.
It was not a little indie room for you.
It was quite girls. Cool. There were girls there, yeah, which I liked, but they didn't like me, so that was pointless. Mm. And you'd end up, what would happen was, it's probably about, I mean, I'll just double check, but I'm pretty sure it's... I think it's at least an hour drive.
Right.
I think. Let me just check. Give me a sec. I'll just check. And I'll give you a better indication of how tedious it was. So it is an hour and 15.
Yeah.
Right. And if you're on a minibus, it probably takes a little bit longer. So it's 55 miles-ish from Gosport to Bournemouth. It's not close.
Yeah, but are you doing this on the website that tells you during the day? It's going to be traffic. During the night when you're pissed at 1 a.m, probably less traffic.
No, but my point is...
quarter of an hour.
My point is you go to... What you would do is you would go to a pub And obviously, it's before the internet and before Uber and all this kind of crap. Yeah. And before you had any money.
Aye.
So you go to the pub and someone would say, oh, by the way, put a minibus onto Opera House in Bournemouth. And for 20 quid, you can get in and you get your minibus there and back, right?
Nice.
So you go
cool.
to the pub for 7, have a couple of beers, get into the minibus at 8, mm. and it would drive you the hour and however long it was to Bournemouth.
And you'd be at a nightclub at 9 o'clock.
No, because you get to Bournemouth
oh, right.
and you have a couple of beers in the pub there.
Yes, okay.
And you go into the Opera House about 10:30.
Yeah.
But the problem is...
Wristband?
Yeah.
Cool.
But the minibus back... 4.
Oh,
no yeah. other option.
That
so
is...
if you're having like a shit time or yeah. you don't want to be there, you've not been there before and you think it's not really for me,
mm.
good luck. You're stuck in Bournemouth Town Centre for 6 hours and you can't get back.
That's a stinker,
and
that, isn't it?
And you didn't even have like mobile phones or anything then,
no.
really, to do anything. So that's my kind of memory of going out for nights out in Bournemouth. But the last time I went there, it was very, very stag and Hindu orientated.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah, it's weird little pockets.
Like, that's a good thing. It's not a good thing.
No, I wasn't saying it was a good thing. I was just saying, oh, interesting.
I went there for a stag weekend because we were supposed to go to Amsterdam, but then the older Icelandic volcano scuppered us.
I hate Iceland.
And so that's the last time I was there. Yeah, that's the last time I was there.
Bournemouth for a stag do. Leukemoa. So like it not a lot.
You're excited, are you?
Yeah, I'm going to join a hen do.
You're a bit ill earlier in the week. Are you going to learn your lesson?
No, God, no. That wouldn't be me. I'll be dead by November. After the American show.
It's my favourite Wyclef Jean song, that.
What?
It's my favourite Wyclef Jean.
I'll be dead by November. He's not a boy, isn't he? Old,
what's he done?
Charity. Remember, he's a charity for... what's the country he comes from?
Haiti.
His charity, obviously he's a big lightning rod for because he's a notable... Haitian, they gave like a minimal amount of money. They raised millions, but gave a derisory amount to the actual people of Haiti.
Sounds like a Trump charity.
It does sound like a Trump charity.
Trump charity confirmed to have bought, with some of the donations, a massive portrait of Donald Trump. It's fucking unbelievable.
Would you?
Although it isn't unbelievable.
Would any sane person, yeah, but presumably those charitable donations are, it's just for idiots, really, who know what they're going to get out of it, and it ain't, you know, goodwill. They know that money's going to Donald Trump. They know that money's that
at best it's a tax write-off, isn't it?
Yeah, massively.
Yeah. I found the story, which I found quite fascinating. I don't know much about it, but I'll just put it out there. There's a village in northeast India called Kong Tong, which has a tradition that's been going back for hundreds of years, where every time a baby is born, it's given a song by its mother for a name. So instead of having a name, it's got like a short little song.
Ah,
isn't
what's
that
your
cute?
Name? Yeah. Searching for the cities of gold. Donaldson.
My name is, so call me maybe. More. But yeah, apparently, people aren't using the names anymore. They're resorting to kind of outside names, so kind of shortening names.
So
people are fearing the tradition's going to be lost.
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? I mean, the internet has made everything very small.
Yeah.
And we've all got to kind of get on, haven't we? But that's a lovely idea.
I've heard you say that before.
We've all just got to get on, guys.
We have indeed. I thought that was a nice little story
That's a lovely story.
Pete, let's take a little break.
Yes.
A little breaksicle. And then we'll come back and we'll do some emails. How about that?
All right, then.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What is that?
What is that? Little bit of the stab. What's his name? Sam Le Bon. Little bit of Le Bonny.
Mm. Hello at lukeandpeteshow.com is the place to email in.
Ooh, baby.
Have you got one, Pete?
Yes, I have. Hello to Paul Harvey. Greetings from an expat residing in the sporting capital of the world, Melbourne. Saw the below spot some time ago, and your latest show mentioning potential spots for me to become a world champion at led me to think of this. Basically, it's an interesting little sport. My computer will allow me to click on the bloody link. Trugor, a bizarre sport unique to Melbourne. It's a mix of croquet, golf, lawn bowls, and the hammer.
Wow, this is like this thing we were talking about before. Yeah, we should find a sport that Pete, you or I could be really successful at.
Mm.
We were talking about pee flicking, weren't we, before?
I'm very much a part-time member of the Yarraville Trugor Club, and I haven't played an official game for them yet. I probably never will, as I live nearly 8,000 miles from the ground. But I wear my canary yellow team shirt with pride as I arrive. So yeah, these guys just have this kind of game. I think you get it. I think you got to fire it through sticks. The current world champion, says Paul, is a bloke who just turned up and in true Aussie style had a crack.
Well, and he won.
He's a future.
Like that guy did that ultra marathon in Australia with his work boots on. Remember that story?
Oh, that rings a bell, yeah.
He was like an old guy, he's like in his 50s, and he turned up this ultra marathon, and he didn't really know what he was getting in for. He didn't know you could stop to sleep, and he just ran for like 55 hours in his work boots and won it.
Lovely.
It's great stuff.
Lovely old job.
Feels like Australia's maybe one of the only countries you can still do that kind of thing in.
Well, you got to keep running from the spiders.
Well, true, exactly. Everything you touch there kills you. What about this from... this is anonymous. It's probably best that I read it out, Pete. You'll like this, though. He actually starts the email by saying, this is kind of boring, so you won't read this out.
Mm.
Well, hang on a minute, mate. We'll be the arbiters of what's boring and what isn't. And he says, please don't use my name or the company name because I've signed an NDA, but I was listening to your last episode about Samuel L. Jackson doing the Amazon voice.
Yes.
I'm a sound engineer in Berlin.
Ah.
What do you think he looks like?
David Bowie.
Cardigan, glasses.
Yeah.
Bow tie.
Really? No, not bow tie. He'd have a cardigan on, though.
Yeah.
He'd be... off to the bug in every night, get some new sounds.
Yeah, is that where they make them?
Yeah.
Is that where all new sounds come from?
I'm not very well, Luke. You're going to have to push through that.
You know that Kraftwerk used to have this thing where they were so obsessed with sound that they refused to have they refused to have the phone ring in their studio.
Okay.
So they didn't want it to pollute the sound they were making and stuff, right? So that became particularly problematic when it came to doing press interviews.
Yes.
Because they'd always be in the studio. Mm. Obviously, people who don't know who Kraftwerk are, you can look them up, but that's suffice to say, they're a bit weird.
Otters.
Yeah. They used to have a phone, but they disabled the ringer.
So light.
No, they didn't have a light. What they would say is, yes, you can do a press interview with us. Please call us at 2:25 PM.
And someone would be there to pick it up.
Well, and they would just pick up the phone at 2:25 PM.
Just talk to whoever.
And if someone was there, they would get it. If not, you'd miss your chance.
I love it.
Imagine if we had that. No one would know who we were.
I've got a lot of time for that.
Yeah,
is it Robert Smith who only answers emails or looks at his emails 2 days a week?
Right.
That's a great rule.
Well, I know people at Capital Radio who used to work with did that.
It was you.
Yeah. Did I tell you about the time I emailed around from the director's email address?
No.
Inviting everyone to a barbecue at his house.
Oh, yes, I think you did, yeah.
Yeah.
Dags.
I didn't get fired for that.
Yeah, because you were friends with Dags.
That's how it works. That's the moral.
Become friends with your boss.
The moral of the story.
And you'll never work another day in your life.
He was great to me. He took me back into the office after I got married on it from my other job and went up to someone and just said, find him something to do, please. It was great. I was there for like a year.
I like that. I like
that. Didn't get paid.
Good block.
No, I did. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. So, sound engineer in Berlin. And he said, last year I had to record a voice for a device that a certain company are planning to bring to market next year.
Which a device?
A device, which is essentially like Alexa, but for their particular customers. Yeah. He says, we work with a company who specialise in speech-to-text recording.
Okay.
Basically, you get about 3,000 to 4,000 script prompts, which require about 60 hours of recording. As English, they are predominantly bullshit. For example, the apple is trained to decipher the ankle, but they basically contain all the possible phonetic combinations in English. From there, it's simply a case of running every prompt through something akin to a spectral analyzer.
Yeah.
So it can recognize all the wave patterns of each phonetic element.
You'd have to be very careful about not running one sound into another. You'd have to be very careful of how you pronounced things.
The diction would have to be pretty. Yeah. You and I'd be fucked. And he said, after that, you simply have to write a text script, which can then reconstruct any word based on the phonetic construction. And in theory, you can get the voice to say anything, even if it wasn't recorded saying exactly that.
Yeah.
Basically, given the right script, as long as the recording is consistent, between 60 to 80 hours of recording are required to effectively synthesize someone's voice to the point where it sounds natural when they say any sentence in English. So that's how it works.
Yeah. Lovely old job.
You like that sort of stuff, don't you, Pete?
Well, I kind of figured that was how it was working, but you'd still have to spend a long time doing different phrases and stuff, wouldn't you, to get down?
For me, it's less for me, the side of it that I'm more interested in, and I probably didn't make this clear when we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, I'm less interested in that. I'm more interested in how it recognises what I'm saying or what you're saying and how it implements that.
Right.
Because people speak in a variety of different ways and a variety of different accents. And so, for example, so the software just must be unbelievable. Because if you decide you want to move to Italy and you take your Alexa with you, that's fine. But if you want to buy an Alexa when you're there, I mean, is it set up for English?
No, because it's all be down to your account. So, I mean, those Alexas are just basically like a microphone and an internet connection. It doesn't do any processing in the box itself. It sends it to a much more powerful computer.
Via the Wi-Fi?
Yeah. So, you know, it'll send it to one of those Google kind of Amazon-y kind of...
But it still needs to be able to understand and implement hundreds of different languages.
Yeah, so I mean,
or is it just limited by language?
I don't really know how. Fundamentally, I don't understand how Chinese people understand each other. You know, Cantonese, Mandarin, all of the tonal languages. Because it just seems to be optional sometimes when people speak.
But do they have voice activated devices?
Yeah, they all are. Yeah, all, and it's all perfect. All perfectly done.
Because someone was saying, wasn't they? Because I remember a while back there was this kind of sort of prevailing wisdom that, well, what you want to do is you want to start teaching Mandarin in schools and not Spanish, because, right, you know, Mandarin is a language of the future and all the rest of it. But then someone else said, well, hang on a minute, it's so nuanced and so different, and you'll get people in different parts of China who don't understand certain other parts of Mandarin because they're in a different place and the tonality is different, and very subtle changes can make it very, very different, that it's almost impossible. There's no point even trying.
Well, I mean, you can learn it, but I mean, it's...
But you can learn
language.
It to a proper level, though, right?
Say again?
Could you learn Mandarin to like a proper level if you hadn't lived there for years?
Well, I think learning a language outside of the country makes it difficult wherever you are, isn't it? I mean, like, I would say it's nigh on impossible to learn a language like that without submerging yourself into it. And even if you learn Mandarin, Chinatown, round the corner from me, they're all Cantonese speakers. It's like,
are they? Why is that?
I think that's the choice of, I think the people, expats, or you suppose Chinese expats, I suppose. I'm fairly certain there's a lot of Cantonese speakers in those. I don't know. I don't know why, but I'm fairly certain.
So you're basically saying your efforts to learn Japanese are like a fool's errand then?
Well, it's a fool's errand in that I don't live there, so it's not, I'll never be able to get good at it, really. I mean, I'm also very, very lazy, but I'm very interested in it. I find the whole thing very fascinating, where the words come from, and they're language that are obsessed with wordplay and onomatopoeia and stuff like that. I find that side of things very, very interesting.
But it's quite interesting as well how, okay, an example, Alexa or whatever the variation they have in China would work based on a language that is so tonal.
Yeah. It'd be more difficult, but apparently they work fine. But again, it's just all about training an algorithm, all about training the artificial intelligence.
So it gets better as it goes on.
It gets better. That's why, you know, Amazon, all those companies, and Google are in trouble for recording audio and sending it back to the lab, just to, you know, because they just need more data, more and more and more data. Like, the bigger the sample size, the better the results you get, isn't it?
Are they listening to us now?
Well, this will live on. I mean, I've got no doubt in my mind that certain parts of the deep thinking computers will be training themselves on things like podcasts. I guess at the end, you have to figure out what we're actually saying in the first place. I think the computer would come to us and go, well, they can probably understand your voice, but mine is a little more complex.
But if you and I are having a conversation, not on a podcast,
right,
and there's a phone in the room that's on, can that listen to us?
It can listen to us. I mean, any bloke who works, bloke or madame who works in national security will say a phone is literally a microphone if it needs to be. But,
and a smart TV as well?
Yeah, all those. But most companies' best practice will not have them uploading everything. And to be honest, what are you really broadcasting in your house?
Which is kind of interesting, because it's about permission, right? It's about the things like, if I chat to my wife about potentially having a new bathroom or something, I might want a new bathroom.
Mm.
But then if I'm being bombarded with adverts because they've heard what I've said, that's a massive breach of privacy.
Yeah, but I mean, like, we all get our new products and we're really excited about them, and we click through all our T&Cs, all the T&Cs that say, look, we are allowed to do this and allowed to do that. Click, 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 and we just click through.
Oh, I never even read it.
Yeah, exactly. So
no one does.
There's a great Limmy sketch about
that. It's like being back at school. I say I've read it, but I haven't.
It's a great Limmy sketch where they're about to, like, break for the weekend and they're going out for a like clubbing or whatever, or having a drink. And they're like, oh, get some tunes on, Limmy. And he's like, yeah, cool. And he's like, all right, I need to install an MP3 player on my computer. And he goes to install and there's this big, you know, T's and C's. Yeah. And he's like, oh, gosh, read this. I'll just print it out. Hang on. And he spends the whole weekend worrying about these T's and C's. Yeah. He's got like a solicitor and stuff, and his wife's like going to leave him because he's so distracted and stuff.
That's what it would take for you to actually read it and understand.
Yeah, there's
it.
No, you know, some companies in the past have like put little prizes in their T's and C's. So if someone, you know, it'll say like, ring this number and you win a prize. And there'll only be ever one or two people applying for the prize because they're the only people who bloody read them.
It's mad.
Madness!
It is mad.
Madness.
The modern world. Let's do one more email very quickly. This is from Varsh, who says, hi guys, I was reading at work today. And the reason I include this piece, because I think you've mentioned this to me as well. There's a guy who is suing Apple because he's claiming an iPhone app turned him gay.
Got a lot of time for this one, to be honest.
He says, it comes after an incident involving gay coin cryptocurrency. He's suing Apple for £12,000 because...
What's a large amount of money?
I mean, it's kind of interesting. It's difficult to get to the bottom of this. Right?
But he wanted to buy...
...on the web for Hey Siri and Apple for £12,000. Check it out.
Oh, my God. Siri is listening to us.
Oh, my God!
What are the chances of that? Turn it off!
Hang on, how do I turn Siri on? Siri! How do I turn Siri on?
What is that? That is so weird after we had that conversation.
Right, hang on. Siri, hey Siri, can Bitcoin turn you gay?
Okay, I found this on the web for can Bitcoin turn you gay?
Can Bitcoin turn you gay?
Yeah. He filed this lawsuit on my birthday as well.
Oh,
20th of September.
Happy birthday.
And he said, I mean, the quotes are amazing. The quotes are
amazing.
He's bought
some Bitcoin. He's been given a different kind of Bitcoin, which is a gay interest Bitcoin, some kind of cryptocurrency. The love of the willy or the boob, depending on if you are a man or a woman.
Yeah. Is that Daniel Farker? The gay coin cryptocurrency arrived with a note saying, don't judge until you try. I thought, how can I judge something without trying?
Yeah.
I decided to try same-sex relationships. Now I have a boyfriend and I don't know how to explain this to my parents.
He's very suggestible, this chap, isn't he?
I'll tell you what, should advertise a new bathroom to him down the phone. If you have his hand in his pocket before you can say
he'd
anything.
Dressed as a, well, maybe.
Thank you very much to Varsh for sending that in.
I he's clearly been caught doing something and he's just trying to style it out in the most public forum possible.
You cannot move for American gay conversion preachers
right.
coming out as gay.
Oh yeah, because they get caught with hands in the till / bum. That's what they do.
There's like, that guy. What's his name? What's the name of the preacher? I forget his name now. Oh, it's annoying. He's quite a famous one. The best ever example of this was he had essentially made a fortune in a mega church for and you know, depending on your outlook, you could make a decent argument, I think, to say that he was ruining people's lives. I mean, he was judging people, making them feel awful for their sexuality,
right?
And using, you know, his faith. Or what he thought was his faith, to essentially judge and be awful to gay people everywhere, caught in a hotel room with a load of crack and a gay prostitute.
Look.
Then, listen to this though, then guess what
God
happened?
God can't penetrate motel walls.
But guess what happened after that, Pete? He owned it, said it was a crisis of his faith,
yeah.
And he got even more donations.
Love it. More crack, more bum.
He turned
more
it around.
More bum crack.
I'm trying to think of his name.
Love it.
What was his name? Oh, I can't remember. I think he was called Ted, but I'm just getting Ted DiBiase up in there. Wasn't he?
$1 million. That's how he got all the money.
Yeah.
He did nothing to Virgil.
So this guy is obviously going through a few issues of his own. Wish him all the best. But that is a funny story, and we can't ignore that on a Luke and Pete show.
I never get tired of men, and it is usually men because we're stupid, just embarrassing themselves in a public forum for little or no recompense.
Which is a Luke and Pete show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Debase ourselves, Ted DiBiase, ourselves in front of a being crowd.
Just so you know, you can love feminism, love women without hating men. You know that.
What do you mean?
You don't have to say all men are stupid.
We are stupid. All of the stupid stories are men.
Yeah.
So yeah, we are. We're dreamers. We're thinkers. We're makers.
But we're not the only ones.
We're not the only ones.
All right, on that bombshell, let's get out of here. Oh, by the way, before we get out of here, before you press that button,
all right.
big shout out to Chris Morris coming back. You see that?
Yeah, okay.
He did a really interesting, quite long form interview on, I think, Channel 4 News with Jon Snow.
Jon Snow.
15 or 20 minutes. Comedy genius, Chris Morris. Amazing social, political commentator. I love him. Love all his work, pretty much. He's got a new film coming out. I can't remember what it's called, but the interview with him, look it up. We'll try and share it on the Luke and Pete Show Twitter about the role of satire in what is a mental age we live in now. And he's got some really interesting thoughts on it. And
is
really
it fair
worth
to say that
out.
Jon Snow had one question and just repeated it constantly?
I don't think Jon Snow knew how to deal with him, because Morris is a brain as well, isn't he? But yeah, that's worth checking out. Before we go, just thought I'd point that out.
And if you ever want to see him, he's usually walking around Stoke Newington.
Is he really? That's good to know. I might go and find him. Mm. Cake, the made-up drug.
See you on Monday. Come and see us, ramblelive.com. Baby.
This was a Stakhanov production.